Community Living, and CITR.
And I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't.
CITR's annual fund drive is kicking off with a party at the Pit Pub in the Nest on February 25th at 6 p.m. There will be great bands and a raffle for rad prizes donated by AMS Events, Varsity Outdoor Club, and more. It's 19 plus and tickets are available at the door for $5 or $3 with CITR membership. All proceeds go to FunDrive to help support your campus radio station.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion.
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthasyakuya, Talitin, Homasquema Steo.
Welcome everyone to Unceded Airways, part of the Indigenous Collective on CITR Radio. Today we're going to be talking about the issue of homelessness as part of the larger CITR homelessness marathons. What we're going to be hearing today are the experiences of a couple people who have experienced homelessness throughout their lives. Both of these people are now undergraduates at UBC, one of whom is Willow Thixon, who is just finishing off her undergraduate and will be starting her medical undergraduate in the fall. Another is Mistua Waston, also known as Rodney Little Mustache, who is in the third year of his GSRJ major. We're going to be hearing about their experiences of homelessness and what it was like for them and how they came to be at UBC. And we're also going to be hearing some really amazing spoken word poetry about the subject. So tune in, and we're going to start off by hearing the story and experiences of Willow Thixon, another member of the Unceded Airwaves Indigenous Radio Collective.
Well, hello there, and welcome to, I guess it's my segment. My name is Willow Thixon, and I am a part of the Indigenous Collective, otherwise known as Unceded Airwaves here at UBC. I have the pleasure to grace you for a little amount of time and talk about myself, I guess, as part of the Homelessness Marathon. So I would like to introduce myself. My name is Willow Thixon. I'm Anishinaabe, Cree, Mohawk, Métis, and French. And I would like to raise my hands in thanks to the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people for having me on their beautiful unceded territory. I felt like I needed to do a little bit of a piece for the Homelessness Marathon because I myself have been homeless. My mom has been homeless, and so have multiple people in my family. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about that and give you maybe a little bit of a story or a little bit of perspective, because I believe that not everybody fully understands what it means or why when somebody is homeless. There's such a myriad of reasons. There's like a whole host of other issues that people just assume for some reason that, oh, you were homeless because of, as a child, because you were being abused. Well, okay, that is very, very common. Or you're homeless as an adult because you, whatever, are not a functioning, can't get a job, or you have mental health issues. When neither of those, it's not so cut and dry. So I'm going to speak a little bit about my experiences being homeless as a youth when I was young and in care, and when I was young and not in care. And everybody's experiences are different, so this is just mine. And then I'm going to play you some spoken word poetry that I think it really speaks to me about that era of my life and how I felt. So it's not entirely about homelessness. For me, it was about the emotions and the feeling that you have when you feel, for me, homelessness felt a lot like I couldn't help myself. Like, there was not enough resources. There was not enough people that would fight for me to get the help that I needed. And that was the worst part about being homeless as a youth, is like, I was 14, first time it happened, and then I was 15, and then I finally got my place, and like, but there was about a year there, and then there was about a year in between later on that I was like, I was legitimately homeless. And if it wasn't for people that felt sorry for me, I would still not have a home. And part of that could have been because I was refusing to go back to a system that wasn't serving me. So I got taken away by social services away from my mom, along with my brother and my sister, when I was 12 the first time. And there was no home that was going to take any of us, or all three of us together. So we got separated. My sister was pretty old at that time, so she just went and lived with her boyfriend. It wasn't that big of a deal. My brother was really young, and then there was me. And so I was kind of in between. I was 12 years old. It's like, well, you know, trying to figure your life out as a preteen and all this. It was okay for a little bit. And then what ended up happening is I was in really bad group home after really bad group home, started rebelling from everything because of abuse that was happening, both like from social services members and as well as other group home, I guess, kids. And so I would go home and I would get like literally beaten up the whole time. And I tried to tell my social worker and I tried to tell everybody, and everybody just wouldn't listen to me. I tried to contact there's like an advocacy group or whatever. I tried to contact them and they didn't do anything for me. And so like I literally felt helpless. So I just run away. And I wanted to be at school as much as possible. But then school was really, like, they had me in a school that was really racist or whatever. Anyways, this is getting to a sob story. And I didn't want it to be like that. So, okay. So, anyways, I end up being on the streets. And when I was homeless as a youth on the streets, there's actually this beautiful amount of family that I made. It's like I made better friends being homeless on the streets than I had my entire life in the chaotic house that I was in. And so my reasons of being on the streets are actually pretty common reasons for youth, either, or for me, and at least in that phase, like all of my friends were either running away from really shitty, really terrible homes, or for whatever rebellious reasons that they had of their own, right? And I think that, I'm not saying that everybody needs to go that route, but everybody has their own reasons and everybody's totally different. And so for me, I've met family, like legit family that I'm still in contact with now from when we were 14, 15 and on the streets. And so there's something that needs to be said about the type of camaraderie that you need to develop and have to develop. It's almost like a survival mechanism. Like, we had a family. It was like all of a sudden I got food, everybody had food, because we would share, because we knew that at any given one time, not everybody was going to have food. So I think that's a beautiful thing. And then I really wanted to play a little song because it's a lovely, lovely track, a lovely spoken word. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience as a family member of somebody who is homeless in a totally different situation. So first, I have to play this content warning because there's some swears. So if you have any children in the room, or you are not really, don't really like swear words, this will tell you all about it. And you're going to listen to one of my favorite Indigenous spoken word poets. His name is Zacchaeus Jackson. Rest in peace. He passed away a few years ago now, but he is probably one of the most prolific slam poets or spoken word artists here in Vancouver. Although he is Blackfoot and from Alberta, which is where I'm from. I'm not Blackfoot, but I'm from Alberta. Take a listen. This one's called Wings. Listen up.
As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
And if any of you have ever seen a 32-pound spring salmon bring a fully grown bald eagle, all claws, piercing screams, and 5-foot wings slamming down beneath them watery depths, you learn to cheer for the underdog. Yeah. Alicia Gadua never knew me from Adam. Complete strangers related only through the endangered race of full-blooded Native Americans, we met in jail, and after arrogantly perusing my sketchbook, he respectfully asked if I would tad him. When I asked what he wanted, he simply said, wings. Well, what kind? I replied. Fuck if I care, as long as they fly. He had a child's mind and a wild man's spine, razor sharp street smarts, cause he grew up on the grind. Stoned from the day that he first turned 9. A father at 15, but young offender by 12, perpetuating yet another generation of First Nations parents who can barely look after themselves. He was in jail for assaulting a cop. He said he saw smack his son's mom. Told me, broke that fucker's jaw and 3 ribs. And I believed the kid, because inside lots of liars tell hyper stories, but his voice remained calm and collected. That cat was mad introspective, and although I knew tattooed wings wouldn't help him reach his objective, still I elected to etch feathers of black ink into the arms and back of a man I distinctly knew to be much less angel than Icarus, more minotaur than Odysseus. And as if he could tell that his candle was lit at both ends, Alicia's light, it was flickerless, which is so ridiculously indicative of his predicament, because you know, if God really exists, and he even has a right hand, cats like Alicia make up the wrist ligament. The same one that he used in 2002, twisting caps at Saskatchewan Cats, tried to jack up him and his crew. When he phoned me from remand, I said, man, we just got free and now you're back. What the hell's wrong with your head? He said, fuck Red Alert. Alberta Warrior's the only family that I ever knew. If your family was in trouble, what the fuck would you do? And you know, I can't really blame him at all, because if you was never raised, you can't fall. Alicia kept his head low to the ground, his eye on the ball, and that ball led him astray. And then it bounced itself around the lyrics of life until it led me to say the story of a child who was never taught the ways of how not to play with all the things that bring hurt. So I guess the best that I can hope for is that somewhere on a weight bench in a southern Saskatchewan jail, a man named Alicia Gadua is still trying to make his wings work.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Homelessness Marathon here on CITR 101.9. You were just listening to Zacchaeus Jackson. That was a slam poet, and it was called Wings, that piece. I really love it because it's about cheering for the underdog and acknowledging everybody's stories, and that you don't know that if you were never raised, then you could never fall. And I thought that was a pretty prolific line, especially when talking about the kind of the reasons. Well, I was talking about why, as a youth, I was, you know, ended up being homeless, and about the community that I got surrounded with that ended up actually being more of my family than a lot of the other children. I think that comes in part because of suffering a little bit, so you share that, you understand each other, and it also comes in part to a necessity and survival. So, like I was saying before, if I have food, I share food. And if you had food, then you shared food, because we didn't know if we were getting that today. And so that community and understanding doesn't really come from privilege and doesn't really come from getting everything. And so that was really beautiful for me. And now I'm going to speak a little bit about my experience as the family of somebody who has become homeless. Pardon me. Through my life, my mom is a phenomenal human being. She is absolutely lovely. If you don't know me, I don't even think I reintroduced myself. All right, my name is Willa Thixon. I'm back. And if you don't know me or my mom, you would have no idea that my mom was ever homeless. Now. And so you would have had no idea that my mom could have ever been homeless if you knew her before either. So there was a certain point my mom was doing phenomenal things, went to university. She's lovely, somehow bridged the gap, went to residential school. Everything was going great. Not great. I'm sure she was struggling on the inside, but I had no idea as a child. And then at a certain point, she just snapped. And I don't mean snap like she became homicidal or any of that. I mean like snapped. She suffered from mental illness and however you want to define that, there's been quite a few ways that different doctors have defined it. It doesn't matter. All that matters to me is that she's on the right medication now and she is stabilized. But when she was not stabilized, not only did we get taken away by social services, my mom also slowly sold pretty much everything and ended up on the streets for years, to the point where at some point in my life, I actually thought she had passed away and that there was no way that we were notified. So it was like I was taking care of my little brother and my sister was around, and I hadn't heard from my mom she would go away and do her thing. And I had just come to accept that. I was like, okay, well, my mom lives on the streets. She has some issues, but nobody can help you. So nobody, unless you become, I think the rule is, a threat to somebody else or yourself, there's no reason why you can't be on the streets. And that's totally fair, like autonomy for all. If that's where you want to be, that's where you want to be. And I think I credit the community and family to a lot of that. And so my mom was on the streets. I just had accepted it. But we had no idea whether or not at some point she was alive or if she had passed away or where she was. And so I went through this insane grieving process and had just accepted that, you know, that was where my mom wanted to be and that she had chosen, you know, that for her life. And it really took a lot of grieving, because to give up what you expect of somebody else, like, you know, everybody holds their expectations. So like you expect your mom to be a certain way and to act a certain way. You expect, you know, somebody else to be a certain way or act a certain way. But at a certain point in my grieving process, I realized that it comes with compassion. My mom, you know, residential school and the trauma that happened, through all of that had gotten her. Like, she survived a genocide and came out and raised us till most of our lives were done. Like, I was 12. My sister was older. My brother was a little bit, quite a bit younger. But she did the best that she could. And then the compassion came and I realized, you know, it doesn't even have to be traumatic. Like, if that's where you want to go, you just let it go and accept people for who they are and what they are. And I went through this grieving process. And for some reason, at the end of the grieving process, sure enough, my mom surfaces. And she tells us a story in her, like, she had mental health issues, including like paranoia and stuff. Like, there was just a little bit out there. But about how essentially Creator took her on this wild journey and she ended up across Canada. She was in Quebec City. She was in Ottawa. She was in all over because of the grace of other people. And to me, that speaks kind of like with so much hope about the state of community and humanity right now that you don't see in a lot of other spaces. My mom has had her own, you know, obviously her own struggles, but my issues were with that grieving process, that not holding my mom to a standard that isn't her, and just fully learning to accept people as they are, accept them. Accept them mental health issues, accept them whatever abuse and trauma. Accept them, that they have made these choices, that they are autonomous human beings, that they are their own spirits that can choose what they want to do with their life. And to me, that was the biggest lesson I learned through it all, was that it removes judgment when you do that. And I think that that's a huge thing, because I see it a lot. And so it was interesting that I had a good friend whose mom was simultaneously on the streets with my mom. And later on, his mom passed, rest in peace. And our moms were there together, and yet he was my roommate. And we tried to help them. What we thought we were trying to do was help them. But really, we retroactively were looking at it, and kind of came from a place of judgment. And I don't think that's where it should be. Like, real, true compassion and true kindness and true understanding and true love, I think, comes from non-judgment and comes from a place of acceptance. So my mom was phenomenal, and it wasn't because of drugs, and it wasn't because of anything. It was because of mental health. But frequently it is because of drugs. Like, I have watched my friends become homeless because of drugs. It's not uncommon. And it's also not uncommon for people to come back from that. You know what I mean? Like, I've watched my friends become homeless because of drugs, and now they run companies and are making a butt ton of money. So it's, you never know. And there's always a chance to make life what you want to make it. And so I'm going to end on that note, because I believe that you can make life what you want to make it. And I try to do my best to tell my story too. Right now I'm telling a little bit of it to the world. And I do a lot of work as a youth mentor. And I try and talk to youth and tell them that no matter what is going on in life, you can always change it. So hi and miigwech. I'm going to end with another poem by Zacchaeus Jackson, because he is a Blackfoot slam poet, and it's called Recovery. It's about it's a little bit about going through the process of addiction and what that feels like. So I felt like it was suiting to this episode. Thanks for listening to my story. Hi, I'm Miigwech, for hearing me. It means a lot to be able to start to tell that story. So thanks for that.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
As a station, we believe in playing content with artistic and cultural merit, and sometimes that category includes material which can be construed as offensive. For those who have children nearby or are sensitive to provocative material, the following broadcast may have strong language, themes, or be otherwise objectionable. Please consider tuning out and revisiting CITR after this program.
In retrospect, I can now say that I was fully jaded, because I honestly truly believe that as soon as I first kicked my addiction, I would have fixed the plethora of problems that plagued my life. Yet still I wake just as worn as before and confused by these vague blacks and whites that so quickly turn to grays these days. Still seem shorter than the rest. Still remind me of Jim Morrison's scary over-friendly guest, you know, the one he said makes angels of us all and gives us wings where we had shoulders smooth as raven's claws. Yet in the midst of this emojo rising murder of crows and caws, I take pause. And take a moment to take note that all methods of madness could lead to gain, pain, death, or sadness, but then again, so can poetry. Which is why I know all things to be possible, probable, plausible. Together we can be a veritable gospel of potential if once again you'll tell me that you love me like you mean it and hope that I'll believe it. Because I'll be the first to concede it. The fact that I lost control, got all cracked and lost my soul, at least for a little while, and I'll tell you. You know the hardest part about being an active crackhead is that you stop remembering your dreams. And I guarantee that you have absolutely no clue how glaringly, scaringly, in your face, staringly real everything seems when you're stuck and just barely existing as part of the control group. Just another dumb fuck twisting under that icky skin on a big ass glass bowl of Campbell's, people who done smoked, poked, and choked away they sold soup. And yeah, at first it's good, and then it's oops, slept in late one day too many and woke up with no job. Then 4.5 years later, you're down on East Pender to the Dr. Sun Yat-sen Park just before dark looking for pennies or someone to rob. But I swear to God, I didn't have the balls to go through with it. That's okay, you know, because these days I'm through with it. I got all this spare time on my hands and I don't know what to do with it, so I figure instead of getting high, I'll keep writing rhymes. Then every chance I get, I'll come back down here, I'll hit you with it. Because you know what? I do remember one dream that I had back when I was smoking crack, and in it, I'm about 9, standing in line outside the gates of Disneyland. And as soon as they open, everything starts to spin and we land in my old crack smoking alley down behind Hastings and Carroll. And I'm standing there, just a little kid staring down the barrel of a big-ass rig, not a shotgun. And I'm thinking, this is not the funnest place on earth. This has got to be a figment of someone's fucked-up imagination. Because I don't see no goddamn teacups. And who's this Haitian-looking guy standing behind me going, be grax, check it out, Papa. Okay, no offense to any Haitians. I'll be the first to admit that my mind ain't proper, but it's got the patience of a finish line. It's been here with me this entire time. We've seen this addiction from beginning to end. We done broke all the rules, no one else there to bend. And if a friend is a friend for the rest of my life, I guess the best side which I got, my own back or my nice, because half my life I've been hyphenated. The rest in italics. I done wrong all the symbols. That's straight falsified phallics. I'm like the late, great Alexander the Great. Okay, wait, I know I can do better than that. How about instead of that whole silly simile, I simply change the rhyme scheme, okay? Here we go. Time's been flying by. I've been crying out, dear fucking God, why? Why can't I simply find satisfaction with a simple action? Why must I bear this narcotic distraction? Call it fiction or faction. It's still a knee-jerk reaction. A motherfucking smoke craction. But you know, I've been fighting this massive curse. And last night, as I was once again rewriting this last verse, I did the math for you. And so before you have to ask, I'm gonna stand here with my head held high, give this entire room one last look straight square in the eye, and say in a voice loud and cocky with pride that today is day 3007. And you know, a bit more than 8 years ago, I decided to exchange my pipe for a pen, reclaim my life once again, stop waiting for all the king's horses and all the king's men to give rise to the moment when this no longer defines me. Now that mind frame's behind me, now my back's fucking huge, and this monkey's so tiny it's laughable. So go ahead and laugh, because after all, this is just a poetry slam, people, and anybody who knows me can tell you that it's been slightly more than 8 years since I first set foot on stage full of fear, thinking, goddamn, I hope I don't bore them, because I ain't never had no public forum for this whack-ass shit that I spit before. Fuck, my broken fist syntax barely fit through the door. All I know is that the more I write, the longer I stay clean and sober. So I'm here to say thank you. Having done so, peace, I'm out. This poem's over.
Welcome back, everyone, to Unceded Airwaves, part of the Indigenous Collective on CITR Radio. I'd just like to acknowledge at this time that this show is taking place in the unceded traditional territories of the Musqueam people. Many thanks to them for hosting our place of learning and this radio show. We're going to be continuing on, if you've just tuned in, to our episode on homelessness, which is part of CITR's larger homelessness marathon. What we're going to be talking about today, what we have talked about today, is Willa Thixon and her experiences of homelessness and what that was like for her. And we've also listened to some really amazing spoken word poetry on the subject. My name is Mitchell Mammal. I'm a European settler whose family settled in Chilliwack, which is on the which is in Stolo territory. And I'm now a student here at UBC. And I'm going to be speaking with Mistua Wastan. He's from the Pekani Nation, which is within the Niisitapi Confederacy, and he's also known as Rodney Little Mustache, and he's been a part of multiple not-for-profits agencies, as well as multiple committees and other groups that deal with indigenous homeless populations, general homeless populations, as well as HIV-positive populations. And I'm going to be talking to him about his experience of homelessness and how that led him to being a third-year DSRJ undergraduate at UBC. So hello, Rodney.
Okay.
We'll get into it, Rodney.
Okay.
Give us a little background about yourself, and then let us know what events led you into experiencing homelessness.
Oh, wow. Okay. I've been living here for 22 years. I've worked in the downtown east side. I've worked the front lines of HIV and AIDS in certain organizations. I found myself in situations where there was a lot of drug use, there was a lot of verbal abuse, there was a lot of abuse towards myself and not believing in myself. My self-esteem was lowered so low, I ended up making wrong decisions. And 1 year, 8 years ago, I found out I was Hep C.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. After that, my life just started going crazy, but I still had a home at the time. I was living with a partner who was, how would you say it, verbal. And he'd always get mad at me for using drugs, and even though he was using, so. But I was always being made to feel that I was worthless. But after that, in the last few years, I've forgiven him for what he's done. And I see now, like, he's more like a brother to me, like an older brother to me.
Mm.
I talk to him about certain things, and I see him every now and then. And when he talks to me, sometimes he starts getting angry at me, and I tell him, don't talk like that. You don't talk to me like that anymore.
Mm.
We're not together anymore. Just be my friend. That's all I can be. Mm-hmm. So, we talk and we were there for each other sometimes. But a lot of times I'm so busy with school that I don't have time to see him. Mm. Which is good, because he's in the past. Mm-hmm. And then I... But there were times there when I was so bad into the meth. I was very thin. I was very sad. I don't know why. I noticed the other day when I was writing a scholarship application, I brought up, they asked me a question about what I was, what would hold me back from graduating, and I put the word loneliness, and I started writing about my experience about being with that word, and it brought a lot out of me, and I started writing, and I said, I can't do this right now. I have to deal with that some other time. For me, it was loneliness and finding, and acting on that loneliness and finding myself in, and making wrong decisions with people I shouldn't have been with in the first place. So I turned myself around, moved in with a friend of mine. 3 years now, I've been at UBC. This is my third year.
Wow.
Well, first year was with the humanities program. And then I applied and got in at UBC.
So it's a big, that's a big turnaround over years. That's a lot of life experiences that you've gone through, and that, you know.
I read somewhere that somebody at UBC we were talking about what was going on in my life, and she told me, she just said, Rodney, you've been through a lot. You've been through a lot of traumatic experiences, and it's those experiences that make you who you are. You're a very special person to a lot of people. And just you being here is an accomplishment on its own. She said, you're bringing knowledge. You're letting people know you speak up, and you're helping people out by doing this. Like, doing this, I'm glad to do it. And it just gives people out there, like, a voice. There's some homeless people I met over the years. I see them downtown, some of the youth, the native youth downtown. I ran into them at shelters when I was living down there. And when I see them, I'm really happy, and I run up to them and I hug them, right? I'm just happy to see you, and they're happy to see me too. But then I walk away and I kind of stand back and I watch, and it just looks like they're all alone again. Nobody's around to, like, say hello or things like that. It's like people walk by, rush by, doing their own things and nothing. They're not helping out. And a friend of mine told me, he said he felt invisible when he goes out. Because nobody bothers him, nobody says anything to him. He's homeless. I said, holy, you're a beautiful person. Why do people do that? And he's, I don't understand that. I really don't. We help out when you can. There are times when I have money, I go sit at KFC. I love fried chicken. And I sit there and I talk with them, and then I'm sitting there, and there's homeless people out there, and I have enough. So what I do, I go out there and I buy them food. It's just like you have money. Money's, and you're not going to take that with you. The feeling when you go out there and you give it something, you see a smile on someone's face when you do that. That's payment enough. It makes more sense than working for that dollar. It's just like seeing people's, their whole spirit, or their whole body, their whole image changes once they have something to eat, and you're nice to them, and you laugh with them, and then I get a kick out of that when they, and some of them always remember me too. And I'm always thinking, when I'm doing my smudging in the morning, they're on my mind, as well as many other people. Like, many, many people are on my mind, because there's so many people out there that are still encouraging me every day to finish what I'm doing at UBC and to graduate. And I really do. I really want to graduate so I can go back and help in any way possible back home in Alberta. And that's what I feel like I'm doing right now, that journey, that part of my life.
Good. And, you know, when you were in the downtown east side and you were experiencing homelessness, you mentioned to me earlier that, you know, a lot of people would naturally go up to you, and a lot of people would naturally want to talk to you, and a lot of youth would. And, you know, that kind of came out in what you were saying when you're talking with, you know, other people. As you pass them, you want to talk to them, you want to give them that food, and kind of give them that joy of being able to talk with a person. And And I'm just wondering what it was like for you to kind of come go through that journey of realizing that you have that ability to be able to talk with people and be a healing person for them.
Oh my God, I wish I could remember the name of that shelter. Sunrise Shelter, I think it is. New Fountain Shelter. It was on Cordova and I forget, it's by that Big W building. Anyway, there. I went there one time and I was with my ex and we went in there and we were in a small room and then we were there for about a few weeks. And after the second week, I noticed that these young students were, these young children, or I would say children, they were very young. Mm. They saw me, because I had long hair at the time, and they started coming in to talk to me. And I was surprised they sat down, and I started asking them questions. I was talking with them, and then what happened next was they all opened up to me. They started telling me about their lives and how they got there. And for me, it was drug use and bad decisions that got me there. But them, it was worse than that. Mm. They're young kids. Some were from this area or from BC or further away. And they talk about the abuse in their families. Mm. And I was so sad to hear that. But I couldn't show it. Mm. After I left, they would get up and leave. They'd offer me a cigarette. Mm. A sign of respect, eh? Mm. And then I would just give them a hug and I'd just say thank you. And they would say thank you for listening. Mm. And for a few weeks later, I got to know them and things like that. More Native people were there. And it was very nice meeting them. It was a beautiful experience, something that I would never change. Mm. Because being homeless, it opened my eyes to a part of the world I thought I knew about as well. Mm. Indigenous studies, I thought I knew about my history, I didn't. Mm. Homelessness, after working for so many years in the downtown east side in some organizations, I thought I knew, I didn't know. Mm. And of course I had a chance to go home and understand, or go back to be with my family. I was given that choice. A lot of people don't have that choice. Mm. They asked me, my mom asked me to come home and I said, maybe. I want to stay here, this is where my home is. Mm. I love you guys, but I have to experience this. Mm. And then I was there, and then I saw things that it was sad, like things that were frightening. Mm-hmm. I saw things that normal people wouldn't do, but these young people did it to survive. Mm-hmm. And then you sit back and look at it and say, wow, I would never think of doing something like that to survive. Like, they would take food that was there for a while. Mm. I never told you this on the walk here. Mm. There were times when I was starving in the downtown east side, even though I had a place to stay, but there was an SRO. There was you saw my apartment, it was across the street from that market. And every once in a while I'd cross the street when I felt hungry and I'd go steal an apple or an orange. Mm-hmm. I did that for 3 or 4 months. Mm. I don't know if they saw me, mm-hmm. but every now and then, I think they did, because they just smiled and they were very kind about it. But then, I never told anybody that. So that's something new.
Thank you.
And that was something that I felt bad about it. And then, when I go back there, sometimes I just give them a little more money to make up for the difference. Mm. I would sit there, and one friend of mine, she wrote a reference letter for me for one of my scholarships. And what she wrote in there was like what you were saying about meeting people. She said, Rodney's the type of person that would go out, and he meets you, and he automatically becomes your friend. Mm. He starts joking with you, and he makes you feel like he's listening. Mm. There were times I was so caught on myself, and like just, some people call it narcissistic, but I sort of changed that whole thing about myself because there's something more inside that needs to be shared with other people. Mm. And it's to show people that how does it go again? To show people and to treat people the way I want to be treated. Mm. Crazy nut. Mm. Oh my God, sometimes. And that's what just comes out a lot of times. It's like a playful innocence a friend of mine told me. And then, I don't know, it just gets crazy.
It's good. Well, you know, it seems like that's that happiness that you bring to all those different interactions, that people want to come up and talk to you and want to be able to do that with you. And, you know, I'm wondering, through that time, obviously, very difficult time, what was it that changed that brought you to where you are today? You know, being, you know, having a home and being a student at UBC, what got you to that place? Was there anything in particular that...
The 99 beeline I told you. No. It was seeing other people, like, when one year in 2012, I was reading this magazine called Bloodlines. Red Road HIV AIDS Network puts it out. Mm-hmm. And I was reading an article in there about Val Nicholson, sorry. Mm. She shared her story, and when I was reading her story, I thought, oh my God, this is like almost what I'm going through. Mm. And one day I finally met her, and I had to thank her. Mm. I said, because of your story, you helped me become, make me want to go to university. So I saw you do it, and I want to do it. Mm. At the same time, my mother, I went to go help her, or one day I was visiting with her, and she asked me to sit. She was doing her homework, and I was in the living room, and she asked, we're up late at night, around 3 in the morning. It was a beautiful winter night. And it's like the snow is out, the moon's out, and it's like the light outside. It's so beautiful in Alberta like that. Mm. So anyway, we went out, and then she asked me about, to answer a question with her. She said, come here, but something else happened I won't get into. Mm. We were talking, and she said, I told her, what are you doing? She showed me her work. Mm. And she said, take this question here, answer it for me. Mm. She said, sit down, I'll time you on it. Mm. Sat there, and I read it. It was about homelessness. Mm. And how to prepare yourself or something like that. I forget what it was like, but it was about homelessness. So I used all my, everything that I learned, what I saw, and I wrote it down. And in 20 minutes, I had two paragraphs there. And she said, she read it. She said, Rodney, this is coherent and it stays on topic. Why don't you go to university? Mm. She said, you're very smart. You should do it. Go. Mm. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. She said, yeah, you're going to make mistakes along the way, but you can do it. You're very smart. Mm. I've always told you that. And her and my other family members have been telling me the same thing for a long time. Mm. But sometimes I let that get to my head. Mm. Seriously. But it was their encouragement. And the one time I went to UBC to apply for this one project called Humanities, I got to the university. I was alone. And it was a beautiful summer day. I walked around and I was thinking, oh my God. I felt something. I was walking by the arts building by Buchanan, where that thing is outside, that little pool, and then there's like that thing across, and it was a beautiful day. It was all green. And then I was coming up that one, down that one road towards the Buchanan building from that flagpole. And then I saw it. There was like, it was like, you could just feel it all over. Mm. It was a feeling that I'd been there before and I belong there. Mm. And that's what the feeling that I thought, I gotta apply here. Mm. So I got into the program. And then I was taking math down at the gathering place to upgrade my math. I did 4 years in 1 year. Mm. Then I had to do two more. I applied to UBC. For a whole year, I took math upgrading. I didn't need to.
Oh, terrible. Oh, God.
I said, what? I don't need to? She goes, no, we don't do math. You could just come in on your language alone and your other, your life experiences. I said, are you serious? So I got in without that.
Oh, well, but you've got the upgrading.
I learned fractions all over
again.
I was getting the hang of fractions again, and all of a sudden, boom, I didn't need it.
Yeah.
But then, being there, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I go to UBC for the humanities program. Mm-hmm. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I'd be downtown for math. Mm. And so it was like my whole life was getting on a regime again. Mm. And I wanted to do something more. One day, my roommate and I were walking along the street near our place. And I said, you could see Simon Fraser on the mountain over there. And I said, you know, one day I'm going to be over there. Mm. He said, yeah, I believe it. I'm going to help you get there. He said, you're not fucking up anymore. Mm. And 2 years later, I'm in university. Not Simon Fraser, but UBC.
UBC's pretty good.
Yes, and there's one time at the Longhouse, I was giving a speech. So I was at the microphone, and I said, I was trying to get into it, and I covered the microphone. Are you allowed to see other universities here? She goes, yeah. So anyway, we went there, and then I shared my story about, I didn't go into in depth. I had about 5 minutes just to share a little bit of my of who I was.
Mm.
And then it's from people in the past 20 years since I became HIV, actually 22 years, June it will be 23 years.
Mm.
And I still have that letter at home. Mm. When I found out I was HIV years ago, I was left in a room in Calgary all by myself. Nurse, doctor and nurse left me alone for 20 minutes to deal with it.
Mm.
That's all that stays in my mind.
Mm.
So every once in a while I look at that that letter and I said, wow, I could come this far. Because when you find out you're HIV years ago, it's an automatic death sentence.
Mm.
You see, I never saw myself living past 30.
Mm.
I never did. Mm. And I'm up there. Mm.
Just past 30.
Just past 30. 31.2.
Exactly.
So anyway, I started listening to people. I started listening to their words of encouragement. I started believing in myself more.
Mm.
I started forgiving myself. I started forgiving people around me. Like my ex, I forgave him. And I started reading. I started reading so much and using my voice more. One of the things that keeps me going, and like when I entered that GRSJ program,
mm.
I had to decide that very night because the deadline was that midnight. Mm. So I sat in the apartment. I was sitting there. My roommate was sleeping. I had to decide. I was going through all the list of different programs that were offered.
Mm.
And that GRSJ just jumped out at me.
Mm.
And gender, I'm a male, I think. Sexuality, male, whatever that is, no. Then race, native, and then social justice. For the last 20 years, I've been really active in the HIV/AIDS field
mm.
and speaking more. I sit there at some meetings and I listen to what they're saying and I try to do what my dad always said, use common sense when you're dealing with people, like situations mm. like that, listen. And question if you have to. And so that's what I've been doing. And sometimes I get vocal about it.
Mm.
Then sometimes I say the wrong things and I feel bad.
Mm.
But then they know what I'm doing, what I want to do, is just address issues.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
they we talked about that. And then there was something that I really want to keep doing. It's like I want to go back home when I'm done this whole university experience. And then give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea. It's a big idea, and I got to start working on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something about healing
mm.
for community, mm-hmm. and it's been on my mind for a long time
mm-hmm.
about the healing. I was walking around with Bojack one day, and then he asked me just out of the blue, "You're a healer, aren't you?" And I said, I didn't understand what he meant by that.
Mm.
And then he said, "It'll come to you." One day we're at the Longhouse. He was looking for me, and I went up to him afterwards, and I said, "It was very good. Thank you for that ceremony." He said, "You know, I want you to come up there and stand beside me." I said, "Really?" He said, "You of all people should be up there. You're two-spirit." I said, "Wow."
Mm-hmm.
He acknowledged it. And that's what I find out here. It's very progressive when it comes to those two-spirit issues, because that was part of the reason I was down very low.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel good about myself. I didn't feel good about being gay or two-spirit mm-hmm. or anything like that. And I was taking it out on myself. And I hid that pain by using drugs.
Mm.
And that's one of the things that I really like out here. And I'm starting to not push it on people back home, but just to make them aware that how accepting they are out here.
Mm-hmm.
Native First Nations out here, and people
mm-hmm.
mainly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And in terms of, you know, people who are experiencing homelessness and how, you know, what might be done to be able to help them in their current situation for whatever healing they need, or is if there's anything that they might need that people need to know about. Do you think there's, you know, for people listening who might be listening to this, Is there anything in regards to that healing that you think people need to know about? Or is there anything about your experience of your homelessness that you think?
Recently, I gave this speech in Alberta. It was about HIV and AIDS and a circle being stronger. Mm. There's homeless people on the streets right now. They belong to a family. I wish that those circles could be more stronger within families.
Mm.
I know it can be hard for some families to be together.
Mm.
It really can be. And you have to accept that and carry on with your own life. But at the same time, all you do is pray to have that togetherness again with family. And don't give up on that. And that's one of the things I keep telling myself soon, one day.
Mm.
But until then, enjoy life and work hard.
Mm.
And sometimes I see, for those ones that are homeless right now, I love you. I love you guys. I've been there. I've been discriminated against. I've been yelled at. I've been hurt. I was the victim of theft. My heart broken so many times. But it's from those I learn, and I'm moving on.
Mm.
And I feel right now, at times it can be so overwhelming at UBC, and I'm so happy, right? And I get scared, and then I start putting myself down, and then I find myself lowering myself again.
Mm.
And bringing my self-esteem down, because I'm afraid of what's next, because it's all happening too fast. It's overwhelming. And I have to take a step back. But then I have people in my life that some of them have been there like for 30 years.
Mm.
Family. I can always call them. And then sharing my story and talking about it with other people and just being there, being able to share and being able to be honest. And then someday people learn, like I have.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that was a lot of your past to talk about, and thank you so much for sharing that with people and for all the work you're doing to help people in their healing or to help advocate for people and what they're doing.
Thank you very much.
That was my interview with Rodney Little Mustache and his experiences of homelessness and what led him to experience that, as also what led him from that place to being a third-year GSRJ undergraduate at UBC. So many thanks both to Rodney as well as to Willow for sharing those experiences with us so that we can hopefully get an idea of the complexities and multiple facets that can bring a person into experiencing homelessness. And all of the different things that can affect a person and put them into that situation. So that is everything that we have for today for you. Starting tomorrow, though, CRTR is doing a homelessness marathon, which starts tomorrow at 2 p.m. And will be running straight through until 4 a.m. on February 24th, the next day. And this is going to be a kind of a nationwide event going on at multiple radio stations across the country. CITR specifically is going to be broadcasting live in the downtown east side on the 23rd from 9 p.m. till 10:30 p.m. And we'll, again, have some pre-recorded content from 1:30 a.m. to about 3 a.m. And there will be other programming throughout that time on the topic of homelessness. So I'd strongly encourage people to tune in and listen to that, because there will be some very interesting and very important knowledge and information being spread on those recordings. So by all means, tune into that when that comes up. That is everything that we have for today for you. Please tune in next week to listen again to Unceded Airwaves from the Indigenous Collective. Take care, everybody.
For over 30 years, there has been one voice in the local Vancouver art scene that has stood above the rest, and that's Discorder, that conspiracy, punk rock, foxcore, sassy, still publishing magazine from CITR. We're one of the established and trusted voices of Vancouver's music and arts culture in the Lower Mainland, with 8,000 copies distributed monthly to over 135 distribution locations, from the Lido to Zulu Records.
Discorder is one of a few magazines published by a community radio station, and we only serve up the freshest local and Canadian goods.
We have interviews with artists, album reviews, live show reviews, and articles about everything important to our crazy, unique, varied, and amazing culture in Vancouver and across the country.
Pick up your free copy of Discorder today, or sign up to have it delivered to your door wherever you are.
Check out our website for distribution locations and all the information about advertising and getting involved.
Hey, why so sad?
Oh, nothing really.
Not very convincing, Jane girl. Whatever it is, I've got just the cure for it.
One, two, three,
four.
Did you know CITR has a women's collective? This brand new collective is all about providing and fostering a community for women who are or who want to be in radio, fighting the gender disparity in media, and centering women's voices and issues. If you are a female-identified person or ally who's already involved in radio or wants somewhere to start, this collective is for you. Email womenscollective@citr.ca for more information and to get involved.
And tune in Friday at 6 p.m. for the collective show, Lady Radio, featuring music, interviews, events, news, commentary. Basically anything we care to talk about. See you then.
Well, how do you like it?
There's only one word for it. Terrific.
The February issue of Discorder marked our 33rd anniversary and is on the shelf of cafes, retailers, and record stores now. This month, we feature the sounds of Michael Redd, DOA frontman and politician Joe Keithley, the rebirth of Milk, an overview of Vancouver's underground venue situation, and more. We have album reviews for Nap Eyes and Cindy Lee, and live show reviews of Magical Clouds and Fields. It's all in the pages of your favorite local mag by CITR 101.9 FM. A special thank you to this month's advertisers, The Lido, Horse Records, Recruiting Canada, Vancouver Theatre Sports, The Rio Theatre, The Rickshaw, Vinyl Records, The Live Van, and AMS Events.
Do you like friends? Well, we like you. So become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends on Commercial Drive, like 10% off at Stormcrow Tavern, High Life Records, Audio Pile, Mintage Clothing, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag, all types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
The Study and Go Abroad Fair is back on Thursday, February 25th. Meet face-to-face with top universities from around the world and start planning to travel. Learn about degrees in law, medicine, health sciences, arts, technology, pharmacy, business, hotel management, and much more. Check out our travel zone for volunteering, language programs, adventure travel, and work abroad. For more info, visit studyandgoabroad.com. There's also free admission.
You write your history. The Science Undergraduate Society would like to cordially invite you to the Centennial Gala, which is taking place on February 27th.
The celebration will reflect on UBC's illustrious past while celebrating the beginning of an exciting new chapter in its history. The event will feature performances from musicians and guest speakers who will share their thoughts on the history and the future of the university. For more information and ticket prices, check out the Science Undergraduate Society on Facebook.